Mr. Thompson calls the waiter, orders steak and baked potato. He leaves the bone and gristle, and he never eats the skin. The busboy comes and takes it, with a cough contaminates it. He puts it in a can with coffee grounds and sardine tins. And the truck comes by on Friday, carts it all away. 1,000 trucks just like it are converging on the bay. Oh, garbage, 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 garbage. We're filling up the seas with garbage, 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 garbage. What will we do when there's no place left to put all the garbage? Garbage, garbage, garbage.
Welcome to Sustainability Now. Today we're going to talk about garbage. I'm your host, Ronnie Lipschitz, and during this semi-weekly radio show, I'll be taking you on a tour of environment, ecology, sustainability, and activists, advocates, agency staff, and maybe even artists about their programs and projects. Our focus is primarily on the Monterey Bay region, but sometimes we will range as far afield as California and beyond. Oh. Well, today my guest is Tim Goncharoff, who's been the Zero Waste Programs Manager for Santa Cruz County since 2007. Waste and where to put it, as Pete Seeger sang, is a perennial problem, and it's become considerably worse since China introduced its national sword program to forbid imports of recycling from the United States and Europe. And just the other day, another Asian country sent back several boatloads of recycling to their points of origin. So what will we do with all that garbage? Tim, welcome to Sustainability Now.
Thanks, Ronnie. Glad to be here.
So I'd like to begin, as I always do, by asking what you do for Santa Cruz County, how you got into this business, a little bit about your background.
Sure. Well, as you said, I'm the Zero Waste Programs Manager for Santa Cruz County. And basically, that means it's my job to figure out how do we recycle more, throw away less, get closer to zero waste, and do everything we can to protect the health and environment of Santa Cruz County. As to how I got into this, I think anyone who's known me with a long time would tell you it's not very surprising. I've always been a nature lover, and from, I think as soon as I was aware of the world beyond myself, I knew that our natural world was in trouble. I came of age about the time of the Santa Barbara oil spill, the Cuyahoga River fire in Cleveland. I was there for the first Earth Day and every Earth Day since, almost 50 years now. So in one way or another, I've been doing this work pretty much my whole life. I finished a career about 14 years ago and had the opportunity to look around for something that I could be really passionate about, that felt meaningful to me, and I was fortunate to find this opportunity with the county, and I get up every day just thrilled to go to work and do this work.
Well, okay, thanks. Thanks for that. Garbage, so garbage is one of those things that, you know, we throw away and it disappears. I mean, I don't know how many people think about it, right? You put it in the bin goes at the curb every week. The garbage trucks converge and pick it up, and then it goes somewhere. So am I wondering if maybe you could tell us something about the waste management infrastructure of the county and the cities within Santa Cruz County, a sort of a broad overview of what
Sure. And like. As you know, it's far more complicated than you described, but I'll give you just an overview.
Well, I'm just saying from the point of the customer.
Right.
Right. After that, it's out of sight, out of mind.
So one thing that not everybody realizes is that each of the cities within the county, there are four cities, the county itself and also UCSC, all pretty much do their own thing when it comes to garbage. Some folks assume that we all work together, and in some ways we do, but we're largely independent. So information that you get for, say, the city of Santa Cruz might not apply to the city of Capitola and probably not to the county. So we all run our own programs. City of Santa Cruz has a landfill off Highway 1 up near Davenport. The county has one down near Watsonville. We also have the Ben Lomond Transfer Station up in the San Lorenzo Valley. City of Watsonville used to have a landfill, but it's recently closed. So some of our waste is now going out of county, mostly to the Monterey Regional Landfill down in Marina. And other stuff goes other places, especially the recyclables. That's the most complicated part of the whole picture.
Well, let's talk about that in a minute.
Sure.
It seems kind of inefficient, though, for there to be these sort of five independent entities, you know, given that, given issues of scale, number of people, and some of the common things that we have to do, like, for instance, organics, which we'll also talk about.
A lot of folks would agree with you. Many regions have formed what they call joint powers authorities, mm-hmm. where you have something like what they have in Monterey County. The Monterey Regional Waste Management District handles this for the county and all of the cities down there. So they're doing pretty much what you described. They've all thrown their lot in together and they have one organization. That's common in many places. In our county, all of the agencies have chosen, at least so far, to maintain their autonomy. We do work pretty closely together on a lot of issues, but the mandates that are coming from the state government, especially around things like diverting organic waste, are making it more logical to work more closely together. I would not be surprised if at some time in the future we see an organization in our county like they have in Monterey County, but we're not there yet.
I was given a tutorial on Alameda County a couple of mm-hmm. months ago, which has one of these joint waste management authorities.
They do indeed.
My understanding was that this was by vote, that this was created through a vote, referendum or something.
Yeah.
So the agencies would have to decide to put something on the ballot, or is that something that
not
could
necessarily.
The public, you know, agitate for something like that?
It could be done at the government level,
yeah.
but with a change of that magnitude, often they want to put it before the voters and make sure this is really what the people want. And I think that's why Alameda County went that way, and I think it's sensible. It's a big change.
Yeah. So what do you think are the three most serious waste management problems facing us today? I mean, we know recycling is one of them, and again, we'll talk some more
just
about
three?
That. Well, you can list as many as you want. You know.
I could go on all day, but I'll give you three. And you kind of alluded to one of them, that since China's withdrawal from the global recycling market, the recycling world is in utter turmoil. Markets are harder to find. Products are worth a lot less. It's really turned recycling upside down, and that's created a great challenge for people like me. I think the next one is in many ways related. These are all kind of interconnected. One of the issues that's causing a lot of concern in our field is plastic. It's an amazing substance. You can shape it into almost any kind of product, any color. It lasts nearly forever. But on the other hand, it lasts nearly forever, and we're finding it harder and harder to get rid of this stuff. We're finding that it's polluting our waters, our ocean, our sea life, our food, and even our own bodies. So there's a great deal of concern about plastic. That's something I spend a lot of my time on. And kind of moving up to a 30,000-foot level, I think a lot about our throwaway society in general. You know, 30 years ago in Santa Cruz County, we were recycling about 10% of all the trash we collected, and we were landfilling 200 tons of trash a day. 20 years ago, we were recycling 50% of everything we collected and landfilling 200 tons a day. And now we recycle 75% of all the trash we collect. We're a global leader in that, and we landfill 200 tons a day. And you might wonder, how on earth is that possible? And the answer is that we're consuming more and we're throwing away more. We have just become a very wasteful society. And I think addressing that is really at the root of many of these problems.
Well, oil is still relatively cheap. And
that's
of course,
a big part of
it. That's where it comes from.
Indeed.
And so some sort of incentive structure has to be set up to make
yeah.
plastic more expensive or more valuable some way or other.
I agree. I know that you're aware that oil and especially natural gas are really inexpensive right now, largely because of the fracking boom. Well, there are all kinds of environmental problems related to fracking. And a side effect is that it's made it cheaper to make virgin plastic than to recycle old plastic. So that compounds the problem of dealing with plastic waste on top of all the other damage that fracking causes. So addressing that would make a difference in a lot of ways.
Why did China institute this policy?
To understand what's going on in China, you have to realize that not very long ago, within your and my lifetimes, that country was considered a basket case. Their people were utterly poor. There were regular famines. It was just a disaster. And just in the last couple of decades, they made a conscious decision to emulate the economic development of the Western world. And in a couple of decades, they've accomplished that. They've become incredibly wealthy. They're an economic and manufacturing powerhouse. But they've also developed all the environmental problems of the Western world. In Beijing, most days, it's hard to breathe. China's rivers and coastlines are choked with trash. And so one of the measures that they decided to take to address that is to stop taking the rest of the world's trash. And you can hardly blame them for that, although it's made life really difficult for people like me.
My understanding was that one reason was the stuff was heavily contaminated.
That's right.
That they were getting all kinds of materials that they couldn't use, and then, you know, they had to do something with it. Is that...
That's true. And a lot of people have been mad at China about this. They think that they're just being mean or trying to score some kind of political points. But in many ways, it's our own fault. I have colleagues who I know would hide non-recyclable materials in the middle of a bale of recyclable materials and ship it off to China because they'd been getting away with it for decades. Well, finally, the Chinese got fed up. Like you say, they were trying to pick out a few useful bits from a container full of what was basically trash, and our failure to properly sort things kind of did in our whole global recycling model.
Yeah, well, clearly this is a geopolitical strategy to overwhelm us with our own garbage.
Pretty clever.
Yeah,
I bet clever. Pete Seeger would be impressed.
He might be. Let's take a quick break. This is KSQD in Santa Cruz, 90.7 FM, and ksquid.org on the web. KSQD wants to thank the following donors who support our wonderful programs with their recurring monthly contributions. Let's see, who am I going to read out today? Kathy Welch, Patricia Zilius, Marge Paez, Pauline Seals, Stanley Sokolow. And even I'm on this list, folks. You should follow follow me along. You inspire us to give our very best at 90.7 FM. May you also inspire others to donate on our website, ksqd.org.
Hear, hear.
This is Sustainability Now. I'm your host, Ronnie Lipschitz, and I'm speaking to Tim Goncharoff today, the Zero Waste Programs Manager for Santa Cruz County since 2007. And we're talking about garbage.
I love talking trash, right?
Well, what have been the consequences of the national sword policy? I mean, I know a little bit about it, but let's hear what you can tell us.
Well, depending on who you ask, between 30% and 40% of all the world's recyclables were going to China before national sword. So that market is largely lost. One result is that the world is scrambling for alternatives. The Asian Rim quickly stepped up, and a lot of material was going to places like Vietnam, the Philippines, Malaysia, India, other Asian countries. Many of them were quickly overwhelmed themselves, and they said no more. They just hadn't developed the recycling infrastructure that China did. Closer to home, a big impact was that suddenly a lot of materials were hard to move at all. And those that we could find markets for were worth a lot less. So that had a lot of impact on smaller recycling organizations that were never making a lot of money, and suddenly we're now in the red. And even for smaller cities and counties that just don't have the resources to adjust to a market change like this. So bottom line is that in many places, some recyclables that used to get recycled are now going in the landfill. Others are sitting in storage, hoping that someday the markets will return. Good news is that neither of those things are happening much in Santa Cruz County. We've been able to adjust pretty well, but not all of our neighbors have been so fortunate.
What have we been doing?
Santa Cruz County partners with Green Waste Recovery, mm-hmm. which is one of the larger area waste hauling and recycling firms, and one of the most sophisticated anywhere. They have a recycling sorting facility over in San Jose that serves not just our county, but much of Monterey County, Santa Clara County, City of San Jose, other places. The thing is massive. It's the size of 2 football fields, and it's got every kind of recycling sorting technology that exists. In fact, they've invented a lot of it. So they can recycle and sort things at a much finer level than many smaller facilities. For example, City of Santa Cruz, which has a much smaller facility of their own, could easily sort plastic from things like paper and glass and metal. But what you had at the end of that process was a bale of mixed plastic. There used to be a market for that. There isn't anymore. So at City of Santa Cruz, plastic's going in the trash. Well, Green Waste, because they can sort plastic into number 1 plastic, number 2 plastic, number 3 plastic, etc., they can still find markets for that material. It's still worth money. So we're able to continue moving things to recyclers that others are having to landfill. So that's kind of a short version. Basically, it's taken a lot of investment and a lot of creative problem solving, but we're still recycling at a very high level.
Maybe we can do a little chemistry here.
Okay.
Of course. Why are there so many varieties of plastic? I think there are something like 9 different numbers. Something, you know.
Well, they're officially 7 different numbers, okay. But some of those have subcategories. Like there's a 7A, 7B. Simple answer is different plastics for different purposes. Sometimes the most important characteristic is strength. Other times it's durability. Sometimes it's flexibility. You want something that can move easily. And finding the right combination of these qualities for different products requires some careful chemistry and engineering. And so far they've come up with at least 7 types, but we know there are more in development, which will make things even more complicated for those of us trying to figure out what to do with this stuff.
I mean, you'd think that an industry that produces endless numbers of identical products could figure out how to, sort of focus on a single one, at least for the purposes of packaging and throwing things away. Well, anyway, that's a
Well, in some ways, that's the
decision.
Crux of the problem. Figuring out what to do with it has never been their problem, so they've never needed to solve that problem.
Right.
But that may be changing.
Yeah. In what ways? Is there any pressure to push plastic manufacturers into reducing the number of?
There is. It's beginning. The state legislature just passed a law, which we expect the governor to sign, that will require recycled content in many plastic containers. That's a start. They came very close to passing a law which would have gone much farther. It would have actually held the plastic manufacturers responsible for making sure their products were recycled. And it set thresholds that rose over time until eventually it reached 75%. And they're not saying that you have to find somebody else to recycle it. They're saying you have to do it yourself. And at that point, it's incumbent on the industry to figure out how to make things in a way that they're more easily recycled. That bill did not quite pass. It came very close, but we're going to start working on that again in January. And we're pretty confident we can get it across the goal line next year.
What was the nature of the opposition? Just from the industry? Was the industry doing lobbying?
Yeah. It was an interesting process. I don't see industry as the enemy. They know their business much better than we ever will. And if we want successful solutions, you need them to be part of the mix. So we brought them to the table from the beginning, and we asked them, what do you need to make this work? And the bill was amended several times to accommodate the needs of industry. But at the final moment, they just walked away and said, we don't want this. We want to kill it. And they called in some favors, and it just didn't have the necessary votes. That kind of process is pretty typical in Sacramento and anywhere politics is done. And fortunately, sometimes we can get good things done anyway. And I think eventually we'll get this one passed.
Let's switch now to organic waste, organic waste and composting. Okay, we throw out some enormous fraction of food every year. I don't remember exactly what the fraction is, but it's something like 40% of food waste.
That's the number the federal government uses. Yeah. It's astonishing.
Yeah. And a lot of that is just stuff that comes out of the refrigerator and goes into the trash. And the state has recently, or not in the, in the past, passed a law requiring businesses now to do stuff with their organic waste. And I don't know what the county does. I know that the city of Santa Cruz doesn't have any kind of organized means of picking up organic waste.
Well, they might have more going on than you're aware of, and
okay,
I'll tell you a little about
it.
That. So there's actually two different laws impacting this issue, and I won't go into details.
Oh, good.
The first passed a few years ago and did, as you said, it required businesses to start separating out their organics for separate handling. The more recent and the more impactful requires cities and counties and other government agencies to collect that stuff and make sure that it is indeed processed separately, whether it's through composting, anaerobic digestion, or some other way. So we are all working on that. The county's doing that in a big way. We now have more than 100 large businesses that we're collecting food and other organic waste from, and that's all being composted. City of Santa Cruz is doing it on a smaller scale so far, partly because they don't have as many large businesses. But they are collecting commercial food waste, and they're sending that over to Santa Clara to a company that processes that into animal feed. Now, we all have to scale up. That same law I talked about requires us to move from collecting this material from commercial customers, from businesses, to collecting it from all homes in the near future. That's going to be a heavy lift, and the big challenge right now is processing capacity. There's not nearly enough out there. So we have a lot of hard work to do to get ready for this.
There isn't any in the county, is there? Any
not currently. We used to compost at the Buena Vista landfill. Yeah. It was permitted on a temporary basis, and we couldn't get that permit extended. So we're now planning for a much larger composting facility at the landfill. We're just beginning the permitting process. It's kind of ironic and often frustrating that even though the state is requiring us to do this, all of the various state agencies and in some cases federal agencies we have to get permits from are not seeing this with the same urgency. So getting a project across the goal line takes a lot of time and money and aggravation. But we'll get there.
Is the city of Santa Cruz going to be participating in this project? Or
that's up in the air still. We're all kind of watching each other to see what we get done. They may go their own way, as they often do. It's working out pretty well for them with food waste from businesses. I think it's going to be really challenging for them when they get to the point where they have to collect it from everybody's homes. So we may go in together if the county has enough processing capacity. Or they may decide that it's better to ship it down to Monterey Regional, or there may be other options. We're all looking at many possibilities.
Yeah. The university has its own sort of issues now with organic waste and is sending the stuff down to Marina for composting. But
that's right.
That's not a terrible, really the sort of the ideal endpoint. And I know that they did a study a few years ago about building some sort of facility on campus, but the money wasn't available.
Right.
And so...
The university has a plan. They've set aside an area for recycling and composting, but there's never really been much money. They've been hoping that somehow this will be self-funding, and that's probably not very likely. It doesn't really work that way anywhere else. So like some of the local cities, the university is kind of watching the county, hoping we're going to come up with a solution that'll work for everybody. And maybe we will.
So the university is interested in participating?
Yes. We talk to them all the time, as we do the local cities. We're all in the same boat. We share the same problem. And we all see the value of working together. So I think in one way or another, you'll see that happening.
Just last week, I went out and bought a new compost bin because my old one had fallen apart. And the city gives rebates on the cost of it. So I'm going to be getting my rebate at some time in the next few weeks. But it does seem to me that, you know, that's one possibility, which isn't really, again, being cultivated, at least until the facility gets built, is backyard composting.
Well, there may be more going on there than you realize as well.
Yeah? So tell me about it.
The county actively promotes this, as does the city. In fact, we offer composting classes every month. They're very popular. And last year, for example, we trained more than 500 county residents in how to do backyard composting. We offer the same kind of rebates on compost bins that the city does, as do the other local cities. Every agency in Santa Cruz County offers a similar deal. So there's a lot of that going on, and we encourage that because for us, the best kind of waste is the waste that we never have to see, the stuff that's handled on the front end. So to the extent that residents can compost their own organic waste at home, that's great for us, and it means those nutrients stay in your garden where they belong.
Yeah, I actually have more than I know what to do with, but
that's
my
problem. Your neighbors could help you out. Everybody needs good compost.
Yeah, so let's take a break, and then we'll come back and continue talking about garbage.
Coming Sunday, October 6th, it's Squid Fest West, a fabulous concert and silent auction to benefit K-Squid. The event takes place at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, 612 Ocean Street in Santa Cruz from 4 to 8 p.m. Come celebrate with performances by Keith Greninger, Tammy Brown, the Coffis Brothers, Steve Palazzo, William Coulter, Shelley Phillips, Steve Coulter, Anthony Aria, Dan and Laurel and the Dooners. Silent Auction includes a six-day photo safari to South Africa. Art by Annie Glass, Squidware, music memorabilia, and more. Tickets are limited and available now at brownpapertickets.com. That's Squid Fest West, Sunday, October 6th at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. See you there.
So does that mean there's a Squid Fest East? You're listening to K-Squid, 90.7 FM in Santa Cruz, California, and ksquid.org on the internet. I'm Ronnie Lipschitz. We're here with Sustainability Now, and I'm speaking with Tim Goncharoff, who is the Zero Waste Programs Manager for the County of Santa Cruz.
You know, and the only way this could be better is if the studio was on Squid Row.
Well, I'll have to urge the board to take a look into that. So, you know, there's a thing called the Joint Waste Management Task Force, includes just about every entity in the county except the university, which I found sort of odd. I went to my first meeting a couple of weeks ago, and for those of you who are interested, it meets quarterly, right?
That's correct.
At the Civic Center. So you can learn a lot about what's going on in the county by going to those meetings. But one of the things that came up was the whole issue of compostable foodware, right? And paper cups and things like that. There's a lot of stuff being advertised as compostable nowadays.
Yes.
And being handed out, but it isn't really, or rather, it requires a different kind of processing that's generally available at the places that we patronize. So maybe you can say something more about that.
Sure. As composting grew in popularity and as the public became more concerned about plastic and litter and pollution, we started seeing a lot of products that were advertised as biodegradable or compostable. And some of them were great and some of them were not so great. And we were constantly being asked, is this a good product? Is that a good product? I can't tell by looking at them. I don't know. As the county's food waste collection program was growing, it became important to us to minimize contamination. We were seeing things like straws and cutlery and other kinds of food service products in there. And a lot of good food waste was ending up going to the landfill because it was full of that kind of contamination. So a solution that we came up with was a local law that was passed 2 years ago, first of its kind in the country. It said, from now on, everything you use in food service in this county has to be either recyclable or compostable by our definition. Well, that still left the problem of how do we know if it's compostable? We found a solution. We don't have to figure it out for ourselves. There's somebody else who will do that for you. There's an institution called the Biodegradable Products Institute. They're based in Colorado. If you want to look them up, their website is bpiworld.org. And they test these products. They will take these straws and forks and bowls that are advertised as being compostable, and they will run them through their commercial compost operation. And then they sift through it when it's done. And if they can still find your fork or your straw, it doesn't get the rating. But if it completely breaks down, then it gets certified. And so in our county, to use a compostable product in food service, it has to be certified by the Biodegradable Products Institute. It's a standard that we feel comfortable with. And this is a standard that has now been adopted by numerous cities and counties, not just across California, but beyond. It's a very sensible solution to that problem.
So as I understand it, there are basically two composting processes, aerobic and anaerobic, right? That means with and without oxygen. Again, you can excuse my ignorance.
That's quite all right. It's a complicated subject.
My understanding was that a lot of this foodware required, I think, aerobic composting. Or was it anaerobic? Do you well, anyway, it was one that wasn't easily available, and so
the type of process matters less than the scale. What that kind of material requires is a lot of heat, and in a backyard compost bin, you're just not generating that kind of heat because there's not enough material there. In a commercial scale, where you have a lot more material. And you're generating so much heat that one of the risks is that it'll spontaneously burst into flame. That actually happens sometimes. Yeah. There's a lot more heat. Those things break down a lot more readily. So the difference is more backyard versus commercial scale than the type of technology you're using.
Okay. Well, that's cleared up for me. But so what that leads to is the whole question of procurement, right, and reuse. And I've been looking into it a little bit. We're told we should be buying stuff that's reusable, or easily recycled, or composted, right? But again, it's a little bit difficult to find information about products. I started looking around for it and discovered either you have to be fairly well off to pay for databases, right? Or you don't. There's not much you can do. So if somebody wants to consciously look at what they're buying in order to address that, how would they go about it?
For the average consumer, I would say when you see those labels on a package saying biodegradable or compostable, don't pay those much heed because they may not mean anything at all. Look for that label that says BPI certified. That's something you can count on. For commercial establishments, as I said, the BPI label helps. But before we wrote that new law that I mentioned that now affects every food service business in our county, first thing we did was talk to the wholesalers and distributors because it would have been embarrassing to require that people use a product that wasn't available. So we made sure that they were. And all the big distributors and most of the small ones now have a vast array of truly recyclable and compostable products. Lots of choices. The costs are reasonable. They're easy to find. Hundreds of county businesses made the switch pretty easily. And in fact, that change had some ripple effects, not just throughout California, but even around the world. I can tell you about that if you like. if you really want to be a conscious shopper, there are local businesses that can sell you, you know, really quality products. One that I recommend often here in the city of Santa Cruz is Coast Paper and Supply. They have a great selection of compostable food service ware. They'll sell it in small enough quantities for home use. A lot of smaller businesses use them. Another great business on the west side of Santa Cruz is Green Space. They got great products. And there are others available at natural food stores, places like New Leaf or Whole Foods. You can find truly compostable food service ware if that's what you need.
If you're interested in life cycle impacts, okay? Life cycle, for those of you who may not know it, is what are the inputs and the waste outputs of a product from mm-hmm. the virgin material to the sort of end of life, right? And this requires, of course, a lot of information and data, which is kind of hard to track. What about that? You know, is there any way to find out information about that? And I'm thinking now not just about customers, but businesses as well.
There is, and it's easier for some products than others, but it's an important subject. It's, if you really care about the environmental impact of your choices as a consumer, as a business owner, understanding those life cycle impacts is important. For most products, 90% of the environmental impact takes place before that product ever gets to the store. So making wise choices can have influences way beyond your personal use or what you're doing with that product. It can mean that that product was sustainably sourced, that it wasn't created through strip mining or clear cutting. Maybe it was produced more locally rather than shipped all around the world. Following the process of creating products is complicated, but there are organizations that do that. And for those of us in the business, while our frontline concern, so to speak, is making sure that things get recycled, a lot of what's driving this is concern about bigger issues like climate change. And if you're truly concerned about that, then you have to think about the overall footprint of a product, not just what happens to it in its final days.
Well, yeah, as you said earlier, that our consumption of stuff has gone up. George Carlin has a great routine about stuff.
Yes, he does.
For those of you who don't know who George Carlin is, look him up on the internet, on YouTube.
And shame on you if you don't.
That's right. but, you know, everybody has stuff, and we have more stuff, and we don't know what to do with our stuff. And hey, you take my
gotta
stuff,
get
and
a
I'll
bigger
take
house
your
for
stuff.
More
you got to get a bigger house for more stuff. You know, which, of course, takes us to this whole question about why don't we have more reusable stuff? And I know we had a brief conversation about reusable coffee mugs, about everybody carrying around their own coffee mug like they mm-hmm. carry around water bottles. Have you guys given any thought to trying to launch anything like that?
Indeed we have, and that's something you're going to see soon. A lot of your listeners will remember just a few years ago when the county banned plastic bags and added a fee for paper bags at stores. Again, one of the first places this happened. And we weren't sure what the response was going to be because there weren't many prior cases. And we were astonished. We sent teams out to the bigger shopping areas to see who's bringing their own bags, who's buying bags. Within 30 days, more than 90% of local shoppers were bringing their own bags. It was an astonishing cultural change that we now realize was ready to happen. It just needed a little nudge. So part of what I do is looking for those leverage points. Where can we help people do the right thing with just a little tweak to a policy, a little charge here and there? So something that the County Board of Supervisors agreed to just recently is doing exactly what you suggested. We will soon see a charge for disposable cups. So when you go to buy a drink at the coffee shop or the gas station mini mart or wherever you buy your beverages, they're going to ask you to pay a little extra for the cup, like stores ask you to pay a little extra for the paper bag. And the purpose, of course, is not for the store to rake in a little extra money. It's to remind you, it isn't really that hard to bring you our own. So bit by bit, we're trying to nudge people towards thinking more sustainably, trying to adopt more sustainable habits, and maybe try to be a little less wasteful. So that's the next step, but it certainly won't be the last.
You know, as someone who does try to religiously bring bags, my own bags, when I shop, it wasn't really the economic disincentive that pushed me, you know, the 10 cents a bag or the 25 cents a bag, because nowadays that's a fairly small fraction of what you're paying for food and stuff like that. It was more kind of a social, moral, or ethical choice, right? But one of the things I've also been thinking about is, you know, you want to provide disincentives, but equally provide incentives to people, you know, in order to get them to change it. But also, you know, talk about how this is for the greater good. I think Santa Cruz, of course, is a very receptive audience, Santa Cruz County, and I'm not sure how this would fly elsewhere. But it leads to the questions about the circular economy. So I'm wondering, you know, the circular economy is basically everything. Nothing ever gets ultimately disposed of. Everything somehow or another gets put back into the production stream. And it also comes with, I suppose, these ideas of extended producer and extended product responsibility. And we're about to get to a break, but I'd like to have a conversation about that. And, you know, how much you think is actually feasible, practically feasible? I mean, one of the questions I had was, is zero waste feasible? Or is that simply an aspirational target? You probably know that some years ago, the chancellor of UCSC and then the president of UCSC said zero waste by 2020. And of course, 2020 is coming and we're nowhere near that. And so, you know, I it's not that I'm opposed to aspirational goals, but I'm sort of curious about how far you think this can be taken. And I think before we get to that, let's go ahead and take the break. And then we can just talk until the end of the show.
I can hardly wait.
Okay.
Buddhism, Judaism, Baha'i, Islam, Christianity, Hinduism. Sound interesting? Faith Matters is a unique bi-monthly program that explores spirituality, life, and meaning with local religious leaders. We discuss areas of common ground and also identify distinct differences among diverse spiritual perspectives. Join us on the second and fourth Sunday evening of every month from 6 to 7 as we have thought-provoking conversations about Faith Matters on 90.7 KSQD.
So, as the man said, you're listening to KSQD 90.7 in Santa Cruz and KSQD.org on the web. I'm here in Sustainability Now. I'm Ronnie Lipschitz, host of Sustainability Now. I'm talking to Tim Goncharoff, Zero Waste Programs Manager for the County of Santa Cruz. And we're just about to launch into a conversation about the circular economy. So maybe you can explain what that means to start with.
Well, if you don't mind, Ronnie, I want to start with answering the question that you kind of left hanging there.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Zero waste
possible.
Is it achievable? And I firmly believe that it is. Santa Cruz County is already at 75% waste diversion. It's a landmark that other agencies only dream of. Once we fully get organic waste out of our waste stream, that'll take us close to 90%. There will only be 10% left. I'm absolutely confident that we can get to true zero waste. Now, it takes a lot more than saying, we're going to do it, and we're going to do it by this date. You have to have a plan, and you have to have a roadmap, and we do. And we'll have to save that map for another time. But the short story is, yes, we're going to get there.
Is there that map available in any form on
sure.
the internet?
Yeah,
so where would you
on
look?
Our website.
Where would
if
you look?
If you go to santacruzcountyrecycles.org, that's all one word, and look for zero waste, you will find the county zero waste plan. It's a great plan. I'll say that again because it was long. santacruzcountyrecycles.org. That's where you'll find all kinds of great information about our program, including our zero waste plan.
Okay, good.
But on to the circular economy.
So everybody go and look and see what you have to do. All right, go on.
Okay. So you're right. There are different approaches to the circular economy. And I like to think of it as a spectrum. There are programs where the manufacturers have a little bit of responsibility. And then all the way at the other end, there are programs where the manufacturer is completely responsible. And then there's a whole bunch of stuff in the middle. And it's a concept that's fairly new to this country. There's more going on in California than elsewhere in the United States. But it's really not a new idea globally. In Europe, for example, the circular economy is very well established. There, it's just expected that manufacturers will make sure that their waste products get collected and properly recycled, and that the manufacturers will pay for it. It's not even questioned. It's part of their planning. And it's really interesting when we talk about that here with some of those very same companies, because, of course, they're global corporations, and they say, oh, it's crazy, it's impossible, it can't be done. I said, but you're already doing it in Europe and Canada and other places. Well, that's different. but let me get into some specifics, if you don't mind.
Sure.
So some examples that people here may be used to. If you buy a new computer or television, for example, you pay a few bucks up front as a recycling fee. And so when you're done with that, those can be easily recycled because somebody gets paid by the state using the money you paid up front to make sure those are collected and recycled. The manufacturer is involved in a pretty small way. So that's towards one end of the spectrum. It's only computers and televisions. It leaves out all the other electronics. So that's a pretty limited program. At the other end of the spectrum is something that was pioneered right here in Santa Cruz County, and that's our collection and disposal program for leftover medicines and medical sharps. That is now completely run by and completely paid for by the pharmaceutical industry. So in our county, and this is the only place in the United States where this is true, you can take your leftover medicines or your used needles to any pharmacy. They'll take them off your hands for free. They'll make sure they're properly disposed of. The pharmaceutical industry will pay for it. And that's been such a successful model that that's now become a state law that will roll out across California beginning in 2021.
Question.
Go ahead.
Where do those things end up?
Different places.
The pills and the needles.
Most the needles are actually the more easily processed part because basically they just need to be sterilized. So they're processed in Southern California and eventually landfilled. The medications themselves, because the law requires special handling for that kind of waste, they're more often processed in Utah or Texas, I believe, and then disposed of in incinerators, special medical incinerators. So in that sense, it's more disposal than recycling. But there are other examples that are closer to what you're talking about. And a couple that are active in California that I've been involved in are, for example, mattresses. Used to be old mattresses went in the landfill if they didn't go to the thrift store. Not many people want a thrift store mattress anymore. So now, instead of that, old mattresses go to the landfill, but they don't go into the ground. They go to a trailer. When the trailer's full, the landfill manager calls the mattress company. They send a truck to pick it up, and they take it to a recycling plant where all the components of the mattress are broken down, recycled, turned into new products. Mm. Carpet works much the same way. Mattress recycling is paid for entirely by the mattress industry. Carpet recycling paid for by the carpet industry. Neither of those go into landfills anymore in California. That's only true in this state so far, but like many things that start in California, that will sweep the nation. And there are lots more examples in the works. You will soon see similar programs for batteries, for example, which are a big waste disposal problem. Solar panels, not one people think about a lot, but the first generation of solar panels is being retired. They're a big disposal issue. So you'll see programs to hold those industries responsible for that, and lots more of that to come. It's definitely the wave of the future, and it's a big part of how we're going to get to zero waste.
Yeah, I just want to mention that I remember when I was looking at this 20 years ago that Germany had a program called the Green Dot.
Mm-hmm.
And as I recall, the idea was that, again, extended producer responsibility. I think it fell apart over bottles in Denmark or something like that. I can't remember. But I also remember something about, you know, Mercedes being entirely recyclable, or rather the manufacturer had to take them all back. Was that just something that I made up or imagined?
No, in fact, there is more than one automobile manufacturer now that claims that they don't landfill anything, that absolutely everything from the process of manufacturing their vehicles is recycled. I haven't tracked that myself, but it's doable. And it's in the interest of those industries. These are expensive products to produce, and burying your raw materials in the ground doesn't make sense to anybody. So if you design it with recapturing those materials in mind, not only is it better for the environment, but it's better for your company. And more companies are beginning to realize that.
So that's extended producer responsibility.
That's right.
So talk about extended product responsibility. Because
that's kind of the other end of the spectrum. It's where you're focused on making sure the product gets handled and not so much on who's paying for it. And a kind of painful local example might be the California bottle bill. You know, for a long time, we've been recycling bottles and cans. We pay a deposit. Hopefully, we get it back at the other end. For a long time, it worked pretty well. We were recycling almost all of our bottles and cans. Industry didn't have to touch it. They weren't really involved. Well, that's beginning to fall apart now. Recycling centers are closing all over the state and many other places. And it's causing our legislators to say, well, wait a minute. Maybe the folks that are making these products need to step up and get involved. So we'll be seeing more of that soon.
Do you imagine returnable bottles the way they used to exist when we were kids?
Probably not. Probably that not. System was based on local bottling plants in almost every town and city in the country. I don't think we'll see that coming back on a large scale. Maybe a little bit. You know, I buy my milk in glass bottles that are reused over and over. But we're probably not going to see that for every product. Mm-hmm. But what it will mean is companies making products knowing when people are done with this, I'm going to have to take it back and do something with it. So I better make sure that I can do that efficiently and profitably.
Well, I'm quiet because I've run out of questions. It's the first time.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to keep talking about this
anything,
stuff.
Anything you would like to bring up that I haven't brought up so far?
One thing that I always like to share is I talk about these issues far and wide. I just returned from a conference in Denver, for example, where I was regaling people with the stories of the amazing things that happen in Santa Cruz County. But this is not just because of our wonderful staff, as wonderful as they are, or political leaders, as enlightened as they are. It's because of the people of this county and their willingness to take the extra step to be thoughtful about their habits, about their shopping, about what kind of consumers they want to be. And it means we can do things here that often can't be done other places, or at least can't be done first. So there are many cutting-edge programs that began right here and then spread not just across California but around the world. And since we got a couple of minutes, I'll give you an example or two if you don't
Absolutely.
Mind.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. I've got a lot of stories, but I'll give you a couple of favorites. About 12 years ago now, we banned the use of styrofoam in food service in Santa Cruz County. Again, first place that ever happened. Local businesses said, sure, this makes sense. I hate the stuff. I don't like seeing it on the beaches. No problems. The chains were another story. A lot of them said, well, you know, I like this. It makes sense to me, but I have nothing to say about this. All this stuff comes from a central warehouse in Chicago or Denver or Dallas or somewhere. And somebody at the corporate level decides what our products are going to be. We get 2 years' supply at a time. you're going to have to talk to them. So, well, okay, I'll talk to them. And most of them came around. You know, McDonald's got on board. Jamba Juice dragged their heels a little bit, but they finally came around. That the most stubborn was a surprising one. It was an ice cream retailer that some of your listeners will know. They've got a store in downtown Santa Cruz. It's called Cold Stone Creamery. They had been selling ice cream in styrofoam cups forever. They didn't see any reason to change. And they weren't going to do it for us. And I told them, well, I understand, but it's the law now. You have to do this. How can I help you get there? We went back and forth a bunch of times. Finally, I got a call from their corporate office and said, okay, we're going to do it. So you're going to change your Santa Cruz store? Nah, it doesn't make any sense. We're going to change all 1,400 stores nationwide. That was a good day. And that was not the only time something like that has happened. I'll tell you two more because I know we're running out of time. Something we haven't talked about is electronic waste. Mm-hmm. We've all seen those video clips of horrors of women and children melting down electronics in the woks they cook their dinner in over wood fires so they can recover a few pennies worth of copper and lead, and then rinsing them out in the streams they bathe and get their drinking water from. It's crazy. Well, we didn't want to be part of that. But, you know, how does one small town control a global electronics recycling industry? We found that there's an outfit in Switzerland. They're called E-Stewards. And all they do is inspect electronics recyclers. And if you're a conscientious recycler, you're using proper health and safety procedures, you don't ship anything to the third world, you don't use prison labor, which is a whole separate issue, and a long list of other requirements, they will certify you as a proper electronics recycler. We said, cool. We wrote a law. You're going to recycle electronics in Santa Cruz County. You've got to be E-Steward certified. First one in the United States. But there was a problem. The biggest electronics retailer in the country is Best Buy. They've got a store in Santa Cruz County. They were not E-Steward certified. So we had that kind of same series of conversations that we had with Cold Stone Creamery. And to make a long story short, they finally said, all right, we're going to get certified. So your local store will get certified. Nah, too much trouble. 1,150 Best Buy stores across the United States are now E-Steward certified because the people of Santa Cruz County demand it. And I know you're watching the clock, so if you want, I'll save my other stories for another time.
I was going to say, it sounds a lot like California emission standards.
You know, indeed.
Which, of course, is much more visible and much more political these days than e-waste and other than ice cream. But anyway, yeah, we're about out of time. And so I want to thank you, Tim Goncharoff, Zero Waste Programs Manager for the County of Santa Cruz, for joining me on Sustainability Now here on K-Squid at 90.7 FM in Santa Cruz and ksquid.org. I want to tell you about my next guest, Jim Clifford, who is Professor Emeritus of History of Consciousness up at UCSC. We're going to talk about UCSC as the sort of the elephant on the hill, and in particular address some of the issues that have arisen with the this project, student housing project, which proposes to build family student housing in the East Meadow. But Jim is also an avid photographer and has developed, did a book about Santa Cruz, UCSC as an uncommon place. And it's become a kind of an iconic site. It's not just a university, it's also part of the Green Belt, and it's practically a state park. It's really hard to do anything because of public opposition. So that's what we're going to talk about next time. And I just wanted to mention, I finally did get an email address. So if you want to send brickbats and stones at me, it's ronniel@ksquid.org. And so until next time, Sustainability Now!